From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
The thing about Glen Mills is it's supposed to be the place where this didn't happen.
Philadelphia Inquirer investigative reporter Lisa Gartner has been looking into complaints of abuse at Glen Mills Schools, a disciplinary school in Delaware County.
This all came out as I was talking to some of my sources and discovered that Philadelphia had temporarily stopped sending boys to Glen Mills.
And then she found out about an incident at the school involving a young man she only identifies as A.W. because he's a minor and an abuse victim.
He was in group one day, and it was cold, and he pulled his arms inside his sweater, which might seem like a small thing, but Glen Mills is very regimented and strict on rules. So a counselor, unprompted, walked over, hit him several times in the head, lifted him up over the back of a couch, slammed him on the floor, and proceeded to choke him with the neck of his sweatshirt while other counselors held him down.
A.W. had asthma, so while all of this was going on, he was telling counselors he couldn't breathe. Rather than help him, another counselor punched him in the face.
When she looked into it, Lisa found reports of violence against students at Glen Mills going back decades. The school promised to take action back in the early 2000s. So why are the kids there still being abused? And why are we only hearing about it now?
Today on The Why, beaten behind closed doors.
Glen Mills is the oldest reform school in the United States. It was originally founded in the early 19th century as the Philadelphia House of Refuge.
This is the Glen Mills Schools. Sitting beautifully in suburban Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, just south of Philadelphia. By the looks of it, you would think that this was a small college, but it's actually a school for troubled young men from all over the United States and even some international locations.
It has a capacity for more than 1,000 boys. It has a reputation as the best that a boy can hope for when he's sentenced to a placement like this.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Glen Mills School's 125th campus celebration.
They boast of the college scholarships, the top-tier athletics. I mean, they yield NFL recruits. It's a beautiful campus. It's easy to want to reject the idea that abuse could be happening at a place like this.
So, Lisa, C.D. Farinola, who is considered as really establishing the culture at Glen Mills. Who was he, and what was his significance?
C.D. Farinola started as the executive director of Glen Mills in 1975, and he was there through 2007, which is a long reign.
The aggressive, very violent inner-city gang kids. That's our type of kid.
His method was sort of a peer pressure model.
CBS News magazine 48 Hours did a segment on it and on the school.
If you're going to get to this kid, you got to get to him through his group, through his gang.
So you essentially have created a different gang with different values.
That's right.
Boys informed on each other. And in fact, they had to inform on each other a certain amount of time to gain a quote-unquote status. Status at Glen Mills allowed you privileges like home passes and the chance to compete on sports teams and being able to travel through campus with a buddy but without a counselor. Farinola's hallmark, in addition to the peer pressure model, was a focus on athletics. He built state-of-the-art facilities, stadiums, gymnasium, and he wanted to hire athletes. You know, he believed that hard work and teamwork and these, you know, big dudes, for lack of a better
term.
Some
of them are really big dudes.
Really big
dudes. Right. Chris Medina, who was the counselor who slammed A.W. to the floor, was over 6 feet, something like 280 pounds. The counselor who then hit A.W. when he was on the couch is a professional strongman. So not only are there these big guys walking around who are in control of these students, but Farinola would like to brag actually about eschewing social workers and not having anything that he deemed touchy-feely when he could just have these athletes, you know, teaching these boys how to be men.
And, you know, under Farinola, the school actually got a lot of praise, right?
Yeah, it was. It looked really impressive. I mean, delegations from Florida and even Europe were coming through, touring, you know, remarking on how well-behaved these boys were that made eye contact and waved, and how well-manicured the lawns were.
The school was actually honored by the Pennsylvania State Assembly 5 years ago. Philadelphia Representative Louise Williams Bishop gave a speech.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to pay tribute to the Glen Mill School in Delaware County, right near Philadelphia. The Glen Mill School remains true to its fundamental mission, the mission of transforming troubled youth into positive, contributing members of our society.
Lisa, how far back were you able to find instances that boys at Glen Mills were being abused?
Looking through newspaper archives, I found glimpses of incidents from the 1990s. And I found a corrective action plan that Glen Mills submitted to the state in 2000. At least 18 counselors, I believe, had, you know, choked, kicked, punched, slammed children. And Farinola made big promises to change the way that training happened, to make sure that kids weren't threatened who tried to report. They said that their phone calls were supervised, that they were hidden from their families when they had bruises. It was not only abuse, but a cover-up. Glen Mills committed to making a lot of changes, and the state accepted it and moved on. Now, in the course of my reporting, I found boys, now men in their 30s, who were at the school immediately after this, and they were assaulted violently as if that had never happened.
So, Lisa, just listening to what you say, there's obviously a culture of violence in the school that has been going on for a long time. How are teachers being trained when it comes to handling students?
The state has specific rules and laws about how to restrain students. Counselors at residential facilities like Glen Mills are allowed to use physical restraints on students if they're in imminent danger to themselves or others. But there's a big difference between a restraint, which limits a child's movement, and punching, kicking, choking, slamming. It's never allowed. It's against the law to use a restraint as a form of punishment. But what I found is that counselors were routinely using this kind of abuse to punish students for something that's honestly typical teenage behavior, talking back, breaking rules, running away.
Why didn't news of these incidents get out?
Well, children did not have a lot of avenues to report this abuse. When they were beaten, counselors would tell them to lie about their injuries. One boy whose elbow was shattered during a so-called restraint was told on his way to the hospital to tell the doctors that he broke it playing sports. Others are hidden in their rooms until their bruises disappear. But they're threatened with a lot of the same things they were threatened with 20 years ago, that they'll be sent somewhere worse, that their sentences will restart and they will have to stay away from home longer, that no one will believe them. They their phone calls supervised. So even when they wanted to, it was difficult. And the student handbook at Glen Mills outlines a grievance procedure where you have to get through 6 layers of counselors' administration before you're allowed to bring your complaint to your probation officer.
Did that stop kids from reaching out and trying to get help? Or were there kids who tried to get some help?
Some students were so desperate to hear their complaints heard that in the summer of 2017, they began slipping handwritten letters under the door of Randy Ierson, the executive director. Typically, that area was off limits to students, but those who took medication at night would walk through the administration building and carry their own letters or those of friends.
Can you give us an example of, like, one of those notes?
Sure. In it's handwritten and anonymous from a boy in Fillmore Hall. I want to tell my parents and probation officer
how Glenn Mills is really like. I'd be scared to fall asleep because I think I'm going to get choked to death. He be saying he'll punch us in the face and choke us till we fall asleep and can't wake up. To me, that sounds like death.
And how did the executive director respond when he got these notes?
After this happened, I believe twice, the directive from Ireson was that students should never walk by his door again. Mm-hmm. At night, not during the day, not on tours, ever.
You know, staff are required, if they sense there's abuse, it's state law, I believe, that they have to report abuse if they suspect it. Did any of them speak out when they knew about these incidents?
That's a great question. The majority of counselors turned a blind eye. They knew it was the culture of the school, and they were afraid of getting ostracized or called a snitch or demoted or fired. But some people did speak out. There are currently 3 wrongful termination lawsuits, 2 of them in federal court, mm-hmm. against Glenn Mills, from counselors who say they were fired for reporting child abuse to their superiors. Not only were other counselors hurting kids, but Glenn Mills was punishing people for doing their jobs and reporting this abuse.
So what is happening now at Glenn Mills? Is anybody looking into these allegations at this point?
City Council in Philadelphia has called for independent local and state investigations. After my story came online, Philadelphia pulled its remaining boys from Glenn Mills. So it'll take a few weeks. They're going to have to review each new placement, but potentially for the first time in history, Philadelphia won't have any boys at the oldest reform school in the U.S.
And what's the school doing? How's the school responded?
Well, Ireson and the school's leaders repeatedly declined to be interviewed. But as a courtesy, I sent them, you know, a pretty comprehensive rundown of my findings. They issued a press release saying that they were forming a task force of current and former students, employees, and child protection experts to look into allegations of misconduct at Glenn Mills.
This kind of misconduct by Glenn Mills officials was tolerated for almost 20 years. Why wasn't this resolved earlier?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure that there's an easy answer to it. I think that there's a lot of reasons to want to make it work at Glenn Mills. Some people say, well, these are criminals. What do you expect? And I disagree very strongly with that statement. The whole reason we have a separate juvenile justice system is because the goal is rehabilitation, not punishment. We know from brain science that juvenile offenders are different than adult offenders. And these are teachers and counselors who are supposed to be helping them. And they are children. And no child should be abused, let alone have taxpayers pay for that abuse.
Is Glenn Mills unique? Or is this kind of reflective of issues in the juvenile justice system in a broader way?
I think it's reflective of broader juvenile justice issues. The thing about Glenn Mills is it's supposed to be the place where this didn't happen. It's supposed to be the best. It's supposed to be the best place that you could hope your son would go if he got caught up and had to go somewhere. And it begs the question of, well, what are the places you wouldn't want your son to go?
Lisa, thank you for coming in, and thanks for your reporting.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
The Why is produced by me, Annette John Hall, and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari.
We had editing help on this episode from Eugene Son. Also, special thanks to intern Julian Harris for reading aloud the letter left by one of the students.
Subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.
Reach out on Twitter at AnnetteJH, at Shai Ben Yaakov, and at Alex Ray Stern.
We'll be back tomorrow.